Today on Blue 58, if the Packers have a big need on offense, it's on the offensive line. How and when should the Packers address it?
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the one and only podcast of thepowersweep.com. I am your host, John Meerdink, and I am happy to be with you here for another episode. Just a reminder before we dive into today's topic, we are soliciting your questions for a big mailbag episode that I have slated to come out this Friday. Any and every question you have about the NFL draft, we're piling them all up. We're going to try to get to as many as possible. Just whatever's on your mind NFL draft related. If there's a player we haven't talked about that you want us to go back and take a look at, if you have a question about strategy or draft history or anything that's on your mind, just drop us a note at thepowersweep1959@gmail.com or pop into our Discord server by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/thepowersweep or joining us on Substack at thepowersweep.substack.com. You can have access to the Discord server there and drop in your questions along with seeing whatever anyone else is talking about and thinking about in there as well. It's been a lot of fun to have that throughout the draft process here and talk about prospects and things like that. So if that's your jam, go ahead and drop us a couple bucks and get in there. In any case, get your questions in probably before Thursday or so, and we will get those answered on Friday. The offensive line. This seems like a pretty solid offensive line class. It seems like an especially good class for what the Packers typically look for. Looking throughout our sample of offensive linemen, there's value throughout the draft here. If you want to go with the ultra-premium high-end prospect, you can do that. If you want to double up and get a bunch of guys just later on through the middle of the draft, it looks like you could probably do that too. If you want to do the, I think, preferred double-dip strategy and get somebody high-end early on or moderately high-end, whatever's the best available, say with your first-round pick or the first of the Packers' 2 second-round picks, and then get another guy in the third or fourth or fifth or whatever, or maybe two guys on day three, you could do that as well. There are a lot of very versatile, athletic offensive line prospects in this year's class, and it seems to dovetail pretty well with what the Packers might be doing and might be thinking about heading into this year's draft class. We'll talk a little bit about the Packers' needs here in a second, but first the methodology for looking at draft pick prospects on the offensive line. The Packers have done us a pretty significant favor here. We don't have to try to make up a way of looking at picks. We don't have to come up with complicated stats or run people through a filter that we've constructed ourselves. The Packers basically have done this for us. Many people have charted this out over the years, but the Packers basically look for offensive linemen that meet three physical characteristics. They want guys who can run a 10-yard split under 1.8 seconds or have a 10-yard split in their 40-yard dash under 1.8 seconds, put up a three-cone time of 7.7 seconds or better, and a short shuttle time of 4.75 seconds or better. If you could do all of those things, you're probably a pretty reasonable prospect for the Packers. And then there are some additional considerations from there, the most important of which is positional versatility. I don't think this is a primary determining factor here, but it does seem like a thing the Packers are definitely weighing and considering when they think about offensive line prospects. Very rarely do they take a guy who is just a tackle or just a guard or just a center. They want guys that they could conceivably put at multiple positions. I think this is really the genesis of something that we've called the Packers tackle to guard pipeline over the years. They want guys that played tackle in college to bump inside to guard, probably because you're getting some better athletes, especially with the zone-oriented blocking schemes they've used over the years, even dating back to the early Mike McCarthy years. That was something that they wanted to do a lot. They really liked that kind of running. You just think about Ryan Grant and the things that he did in the Packers' ground game at his peak. Like, he's just an ideal zone running guy, just the one cut and go running back. That was really the hallmark of his game. That dated to early Mike McCarthy philosophy. That's what he wanted to do. But the Packers like their versatile athletes here. So they want tackles who can play guard. They want guards who can play center. They want centers that they could conceivably send out to guard or wherever. And I think you see this manifest in a few different ways. First, you have maybe tackles that are a little bit smaller historically ending up having success in Green Bay, guys like David Bakhtiari and Zach Tom right now, because the Packers took them, I think, thinking that they could play tackle or guard. You could even look at like TJ Lang as an example of that, or Josh Sitton as an example of that. Both Sitton and Lang were in competition at tackle early in their career, though they landed at guard, and Sitton actually bumped out to tackle for a very ill-advised stint there late in the 2015 season in a game the Packers lost to the Arizona Cardinals. But they you see this showing up in how the Packers handle those guys. So they take a guy like David Bakhtiari, who is a smallish tackle in college, projected by many as a guard in the NFL, and they start him at tackle and let him figure it out from there. Is he a tackler, or are you going to have to move him somewhere else? Well, as it turns out, he ends up being a very, very good tackle for a very long time until, well, we don't have to go into how things ended there. But TJ Lang was in competition with Brian Bulaga at tackle there before he ultimately landed at guard. Josh Sitton, like I said, Zach Tom has played both guard and tackle and seems to be finding a home at tackle for right now, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But the Packers do like that positional versatility. Even a guy like Josh Myers, who has played exclusively center with the Packers and played exclusively center at Ohio State, the Packers took him and said, we like him as both a center and a guard. The Packers want guys that can play multiple spots. So that's something that we're going to include in our evaluations here. The Packers' needs, I think, are both simple and complicated in terms of how you address them. So simple in terms of what they need and complicated in terms of how you address them. So the simple part is there is the needs here. They need a starting guard at right guard one way or another. They got to figure out who that is going to be. So do they commit to Sean Ryan there? Do they bump Zach Tom inside? Do they draft a guy who could be a tackle or guard and stick him at guard to start out? Or do they bump Zach Tom inside and put their tackle prospect at tackle, saying we know what Tom can do at tackle. We can always switch him back if we have to. They need depth at tackle one way or another, probably through the draft here. They're not going to sign anybody at this point, but you've got Rashid Walker and Zach Tom as your starting tackles here. And then it gets a little bit iffy from there. You've got Caleb Jones, who the Packers have had as a long-term developmental prospect, I think we can say now. Luke Tenuta, who's kind of in the same boat as Caleb Jones, but was injured for really all of last year. And that's basically it from there. Some other practice guys sticking around, but they need depth at tackle. And then I think they need some competition at center. This is something the Packers have not been able to distance themselves from for a couple of years now, and it's been something that they have kind of brought on themselves. Adam Stanovich comes out about this time last year and says, yeah, Josh Myers needs to be better. We got to get more out of him. We're looking at options there. They get to training camp or OTAs in the training camp, and nothing really happens there. And then we're back with this conversation again this year with Rob Domofsky reporting that the Packers internally view Zach Tom as a potential really high-level center, which is something we've argued on this podcast for a long time here. I think physically he's probably a better fit inside than outside, but outside is probably a more valuable position. So it gets complicated there. Either way, you're looking at a situation where Josh Myers is coming to the end of his contract here. You had him 2021, 22, now 23. So he's in the final year of his rookie contract as a second-round pick. You're going to have to figure out what you do at center in the long term. And in the short term, you'd probably like a little bit more out of that position on the offensive line. So simple needs there, as you can see. How you solve those needs gets complicated. And we've already got a question in the queue for Friday's mailbag about what happens if their strategy doesn't work or doesn't play out how they want it to. If the idea here is that the Packers want to get a high-end tackle prospect and have that solve two positions at once because you put whoever it is at right tackle and bump Zach Tom into guard or center, that's something you certainly can do. But I think we're kind of looking at an analogous situation to where the Packers were at wide receiver in 2020. When it looked like they had a lot of options at receiver that would fit them, Justin Jefferson and Brandon Ayuk, the two ones that seemed most likely to fit with what the Packers liked in that 2020 draft class. And then there's kind of an unexpected run on receivers that took all the guys they liked off the board prior to when the Packers could pick. They didn't end up trading up, though apparently they tried. This is an aside. We've talked a lot about really basically the 2018 to well, really 2023, the Packers not adding a lot of wide receiver talent. But we've always gotten consistent reports about how hard they've tried to do things. And if I'm Aaron Rodgers during that era, this is one of the things that hacks me off about Brian Gutekunst in the Packers front office. Because they're always very good about putting the word out about how they tried to get people. Oh, we tried to trade up in the draft. Oh, we tried to get Emmanuel Sanders. Oh, we tried to sign, what is his name? The wide receiver Allen from the Jaguars that ended up signing with the Bears. We tried to do this, that, and the other thing. Oh, we tried all these things. Trying doesn't count, okay? Like, it doesn't do you any good to try to do things. Like, Yoda is the ultimate NFL draft or player acquisition advisor here. There's either do or do not. There is no try. Trying doesn't count. Trying doesn't help you win a Super Bowl or add talent at these positions. That's an aside. Things have worked out for the Packers. But it is always amusing to me when you hear these reports about, like, well, we tried. Well, you want credit for trying? It doesn't do you any good. You got to actually do things. So all that to say, the Packers may find themselves in a similar situation this year. It looks like the draft, if you believe, you know, a lot of the consensus mock drafts and you use the draft simulators and things like that, it looks like things should break pretty well for the Packers, just given the amount of offensive line talent that should probably be available toward the end of the first round, pick 25 in particular. But if things go badly, what do the Packers do? How do things shake out? I don't have a firm answer for that right now, but I think there are some interesting options, and we'll talk about that a little bit more on Friday. I just wanted to raise that possibility of how things could shake out here, because if you're planning on things being available for the Packers at 25, you have to plan for the alternate possibility that things aren't available for them. So who are the guys that could be available? Well, I took, again, the consensus mock draft board as we picked at the top 250 guys as of mid-March. So we're a month later here now. It should basically shake out pretty well. Most of what these guys were ranked on the big board at the time that they entered our sample here seemed to be about the same, looking at, like, Pro Football Focus's big board. Dane Brugler's beast is out now. It's basically the same. So of that 250, I think there were 49 prospects that were offensive line prospects as of our capture. Only a handful of them met all of the thresholds for the Packers. There were a few guys who, you know, hit like the 40-yard dash, 10-yard split, and then didn't do the agility drills. We're not going to talk about those guys just for the sake of simplicity here. Partly due to the challenges of scouting offensive line stuff, you know, if you can watch tape, the tape grinding aspect is crucial to really having in-depth opinions on offensive line prospects. What I'm trying to do here is give you a sample of guys that meet all of the Packers' thresholds and some information about those guys. That's really about as good as I think we can do on the offensive line at this point. So, of those 49 guys, we've got 6 to 8 or so that meet all of the thresholds, and then a few guys that met a couple of them that did all of the testing. So who have we got here? Well, first out of the gate is, I think, the consensus, and I think obviously the best offensive line prospect in this year's draft, number 8 on the consensus mock draft big board, Joe Ault out of Notre Dame. 6'8", 321 pounds, played exclusively at left tackle over the past 3 years. Looking at him, his scouting profile, the way that he's played at Notre Dame, this is your stereotypical franchise left tackle. If you're the general manager of a team picking in the top 10 and you need a tackle and Joe Ault is there, I think you put yourself down on your draft card with Joe Ault and say to yourself, well, no matter what else happens in my GM tenure, at least I made one good pick, assuming he doesn't get injured or decide that he wants to quit football and become a monk or something like that, whatever, you know, things that could go sideways for you. Ault seems like that clean of a prospect. He gave up just 5 pressures all of last year playing at Notre Dame. He has a really, really solid resume. There's not really much bad on his rap sheet here in terms of his scouting profile. The one caution I would have here, and this is going to come up with a few guys in this year's class, is the height thing. It's good to have big offensive linemen. It's good to have tall, long offensive linemen. And I think that is probably not a huge detriment for Ault here. But when anybody picks a super tall tackle, Everybody tells themselves that they're getting Jonathan Ogden, who's even bigger, 6'9". Everybody says that's what you're getting when you get the super tall, super long offensive lineman. And I hope that's true of Ault, but size can also be a detriment if it turns out that you can't bend or you're not flexible enough to handle the really bendy edge rushers, you know, around the end. It's a sample size of 2. But both Pro Football Focus and Dane Brugler mentioned things like balance and flexibility and movement stuff among his cons. It doesn't show up in his testing numbers. His testing numbers are as good as anybody in this class. But I will put out that word of caution on Ault and all of these tall tackles just as sort of a word of caution. It's not even a specific thing with Ault. It's just something I think you have to be aware of as you look at these prospects and look at guys that they are compared to. Size can be a detriment sometimes too. And part of that, I think, is just learning to play the position. Part of that is figuring out how do you rely on technique rather than athleticism. Some guys who are super-duper athletes, when they get put in situations where they have to rely on technique as opposed to their athleticism, well, it turns out their technique isn't all that good because they haven't ever had to learn how. But it is a data point that these guys or that these scouting services, whatever, do mention this, I think, about Ault. Fun fact about Joe Ault, his dad, John, played at Iowa and with the Kansas City Chiefs. That in itself is not super notable. But he was nicknamed the Monumental Minnesotan, which I think is pretty cool. And he was as tall as, but not quite as big as, his son at 6'8" and 298 pounds. Next up on our list is number 28, Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, 6'7 and 6'8", so nearly 6'8", 322 pounds. He played primarily right tackle, but does have 70 snaps at left tackle over the past three seasons, most of them coming in 2022. He is a monster athlete. His testing numbers are comparable to Joe Ault's. He is the guy that I think you draft and hope that he really figures out how to play tackle, because you're going to have to learn hope he learns how to play tackle. All of his scouting reports are basically the inverse of Ault's. Ault is the perfectly clean blocker. There are some questions about his body and movement and stuff like that. Very minimal, again, we have to emphasize. But Guyton, everybody talks about how great of an athlete he is and how that shows up on the field, and his movement stuff is tremendous. But there are questions about his technique. So you take him in the late first round if you're in the market for a tackle and hope that he refines that technique at the NFL level. That is a big ask, but it is the ask that gets made of a lot of young NFL players. Fun fact about Guyton, he made semi-regular appearances as a tight end and H-back for TCU before he transferred to Oklahoma in 2021. He actually caught a 6-yard touchdown pass as a tight end in 2021 as well. Up next is Graham Barton out of Duke, 6'5", 313 pounds, number 30 on the consensus mock draft big board. He's played exclusively left tackle for the past three seasons, but did have 5 starts at center for Duke in 2020. He has fantastic athleticism. So Ault is a dynamic athlete. Guyton is a dynamic athlete. Barton here is in a class by himself, a 9.99 relative athletic score, and his height and weight, I think, are perfect for interior stuff. The knock on him is he's a little bit small for a tackle. It gets a little bit iffy as to what is small and what is too big, but in that 6'5 to 6'8 sort of range, you have a lot of variation in there. Size isn't everything, though. As we've talked about with both David Bakhtiari and Zach Tom, if you're a dynamic athlete like Barton is, you could probably live on the outside if you absolutely have to. And I think this could be a positive hiding as a negative, because if you maybe are not an ideal size for tackle, you're probably a really good size for guard. And I think 6'5", 313 pounds profiles pretty well as a guard, and he could just be the latest participant in that Packers tackle-to-guard pipeline. Fun fact about Barton, he is the recipient, or was the recipient back in 2021, of Duke's Mike Suglia Award, which is an award presented annually to the second-year member of the Duke football program who best exemplifies the qualities of the late Mike Suglia. And if you didn't know, I didn't, so I had to look it up. Suglia was, according to Duke, an offensive lineman at the school in 1976 and 1977. He died unexpectedly during the spring of his sophomore year. He was, quote, an excellent student, an outstanding football player, and most importantly, a young man of the highest integrity, end quote. So Barton got that award for exemplifying those qualities. That, I think, is a pretty darn good achievement for any football player. If my son was an NFL draft prospect and he never made it in the NFL, but he had received an award like that, I think I would be pretty satisfied as a dad with what he had done with his athletic gifts. That's pretty remarkable, something like that. Next up is number 56, Patrick Paul out of Houston. 6'7", 331 pounds. Kind of got a theme going, do you notice here? Another big boy. Exclusively a left tackle over the past 3 years. Pretty much clean as a whistle as a pass blocker. Just 9 pressures last season, 1 sack and 1 hit among them. So a few hurries, which are not always the offensive line fault. He doesn't grade out, according to Pro Football Focus, as a particularly good run blocker. Scouts say similar things almost everywhere you look. Sometimes you see at that size struggles as a run blocker, because if run blocking comes down to the low man winning, it gets to be hard to be the low man that wins when it's harder for you to get low than anyone else. And at 6'7" and 331 pounds, you could see a little bit of an issue with maybe some run blocking. Still plenty of size there. If nothing else, people will have to run around him in the ground game. So take a big body, put him on your offensive line, and hope he figures it out, I guess. The fun fact about Paul here is that in his official Houston bio, he offers this piece of advice. Comparison is the thief of joy. Good advice. Let's compare some more football players. 59, Cooper Beebe out of Kansas State. 6'3", 222 pounds. Pretty solid athleticism, too. Significant time at both left tackle and left guard. Also played 25 snaps at right guard and more than 100 snaps at right tackle in his college career. A lot of positional versatility and a lot of athleticism, too. A 9.28 relative athletic score. Let's put a little bit of an asterisk, though, on that testing score, because there is athleticism and then there's functional athleticism. I think his functional athleticism shows up as pretty much limited no matter which scout you ask. They don't see that sort of testing stuff come up on the field. He's also got notably short arms, just a shade over 31 inches, which may not be an issue, but it is for some teams. Some teams really prize length in terms of the length of your arm. So, hey, if that's a problem for you, that's going to be a problem with Cooper Beebe. I think the split between the testing athleticism and the athleticism that shows up on the field is probably the bigger issue if you're looking at issues in his scouting profile. But if you're looking for a versatile, you know, multi-position guy, this is your guy in the NFL draft for this year. Fun fact about Beebe, he has actually graduated already, or had actually graduated with a degree in social studies education as of May 2023, and went on to pursue his master's degree in curriculum and instruction. Looks like he's got a future in education if he chooses to not, you know, go the distance with football. Good on him, though, for graduating and going back for a master's degree. Our next prospect, we've got a bit of a jump here because BB is 59 on the big board. Our next guy on the big board doesn't come until number 134, and that's Tanner Bordellini out of Wisconsin. Sounds like a sort of secret kind of pasta, like available only to Italians or something. Let's go have some Bordellini. Oh, you can't order that. You're not from Italy. Anyway, 6'4", 303 pounds, exclusively a center in 2023, all over the place prior to that. Just in 2022, he played 411 snaps at left guard, another 74 at center, and then 163 snaps at right guard. So you say, oh, he's an interior guy. Nope, but back in 2021, playing a backup role to be sure, but back in 2021, more than 200 snaps at right tackle, 58 at left guard, and another 16 at right guard. That versatility, I think, is pretty unique so far, other than Beebe. It's not necessarily a good thing that he moved all over the place. Just think about this. Have you ever noticed that the ultra-high-end guys are never playing 4 different positions on the offensive line consistently? Sometimes that kind of quote-unquote versatility only shows up because you're good enough, but not really that great. Maybe that's the case with Bordellini. Maybe not. But I think it is worth mentioning. Some guys get moved around just because they're good enough to be a college football athlete. They're good enough that you need to have them on the field, but they're not good enough to just win a job outright. You kind of just have to fill them in wherever you need them. And that seems to be the case with Bordellini until he locked things down at center and graded out pretty well at center. Pro Football Focus made specific mention of that at how well he did at center this past year. Take their grading with a grain of salt, of course. But he did not have a consistent role prior to that. He did also start a game at tight end in 2022, for whatever that's worth. You know, you get extra linemen out there, things and positional designations get a little bit iffy, but he does technically have that on his resume as a fun fact there. Next up is number 139 on the big board, Mason McCormick out of South Dakota State. 6'4", 309 pounds. If you're looking for a small school guy, if you're looking for an interior lineman, McCormick might be your guy. Left guard exclusively for the past 3 years. I like that he is an established interior guy. You get very few of those in a given year because guys who are, well, the really elite or higher-end prospects tend to be either guys who started out as tackles and moved inside or just tackles. You put your most valuable offensive lineman on the outside because that's the most valuable offensive line position. But McCormick has been steady on the inside this year, playing, of course, with Tucker Kraft. And that is going to be the knock on McCormick. The small school leap, obviously it can be done. We saw what Tucker Kraft did for the Packers last year. It can be done. We've mentioned a couple other guys. I forget his exact name, but the running back out of South Dakota State has showed up well in our draft numbers too. Look, McCormick, if you're looking for a small school guy, he has some interior lineage there, so a pedigree, put it that way. And he meets the thresholds in terms of what the Packers typically look for athletically, has the size of an interior offensive lineman, almost the exact same size as John Runyon, who's moved on now. But if you're looking for an interior guy, this might be it. Fun fact about McCormick, he competed in track and field in high school and was second in the discus and fifth in shot put at the Class AA state meet as a senior in high school. Not too shabby. Number 140, right after McCormick, on the big board, is Bo Limmer out of Arkansas. 6'4", 302 pounds. Had to actually just screenshot his snap counts from Pro Football Focus to make sure that I got them all right, because he's another guy who's played all over the place. In 2023, he played 73 snaps at left guard and another 776 at center itself. 2022, 8 at left guard, 91 at center, and nearly 900 at right guard. And then in 2021, another 800 at right guard and a single solitary snap at center. The good stuff is that positional versatility. You're looking for another versatile athlete who can do things up front for you. He's got experience playing all three interior spots. Can't do much better than that if you're looking for an interior prospect. The bad is kind of like Tanner Bartolini we talked about. Did he really ever have a job? Did he ever really win a job? Or were they just playing him where they needed him and he was just better than whatever sophomore or junior was behind him on the depth chart? Possibly. We're getting pretty far down the draft big board here. We're almost into day three. We're well into day three by this point. So take that all with a grain of salt. You're probably, by the time you're in day three, let's be honest, the stud linemen are generally gone. You're finding guys who have significant holes in their game by this point. If you're just drafting for kind of what the Packers look for, he meets those thresholds and he's done a lot of stuff on the interior. I think by this point in the draft, if you're really nitpicking, kind of lay it off it a little bit. You're going to have guys with the holes in their game. That's just kind of how it is. Fun fact about him, though, he was a competitive power lifter in high school, so plenty strong. Personal best of 515 pounds in the squat, 360 pounds in the bench, and 485 pounds in the deadlift. He is almost strong enough, I think, to be a podcaster with those kind of numbers. So just keep working at it. Hopefully he's improved by then. Maybe he can really shape himself into someone who can handle the physical rigors of doing, you know, a couple, like, half-hour podcasts a week. So good on him. The best of the rest here. Got a couple guys that are way late in the draft here. Just going to mention their names, a couple things about him, about them. Brandon Coleman of TCU, 6'6", 313 pounds, played both left tackle and left guard at Texas Christian. Of note, he had the second highest relative athletic score in our sample, upper 9.7s, I believe. Don't have it written down in front of me. It's somewhere in the volumes of notes here. Also of note, number 244 on the big board, so way late in the draft, Frank Crum out of Wyoming. A big boy, 6'8", 313 pounds, started at both left and right tackle. Looking at a Yosh Nyman, Caleb Jones type prospect in there, you never know. Of note, he's cousins with Adam Morrison, the former Gonzaga great basketball player and moderately successful NBA player. Only a few seasons in the NBA, but a couple rings for his trouble. Sent me down a rabbit hole yesterday of looking in for information about Adam Morrison out of Gonzaga, and reliving some old March Madness memories as well. Just nothing to add there, just was thinking about it. And I think that's the fun part of doing this, is just the different rabbit holes it can send you down. Now, other guys worth mentioning. I said up top that there were a few guys who did not hit all of the thresholds that the Packers have, who I think are worth keeping an eye on anyway. Just of note, we're not going to go in depth on any of these guys, but Dominique Pooney out of Kansas State missed on the 10-yard split but hit the other numbers. Layden Robinson out of Texas A&M and Isaiah Adams out of Illinois missed on the 3-cone drill by 5 700ths of a second, respectively. So they are just on the borderline of being firmly in the Packers camp. They are numbers 160 and 164 on the big board. And then Drake Nugent out of Michigan also missed on the 10-yard split, but hit on the other things as well. Just keep those names in the back of your mind as you look for guys that the Packers could be interested for, in most cases here well into day three of the draft. Pooney in particular, I think in that group, should stand out for you. But that's what I've got on the offensive line. Again, not real in-depth, and I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek. We're over 30 minutes here. But just some things to think about, some options for the Packers on the offensive line. Look for that athleticism. Look for that positional versatility, and then count on the Packers to coach them up from there. I think if you're looking for one consistent theme from the really Matt LaFleur era, maybe the Adam Stenovich era, they've been able to get a lot out of their offensive line. They've done some really unorthodox things. It hasn't always worked. We can mention the 2021 divisional round game again and again and again, and I think that is worth mentioning again and again and again. But they've gotten a lot out of their offensive line doing some really unorthodox things. And they were doing some unorthodox things last year, the timeshare stuff with Rashid Walker and Yash Nyman, the stuff at right guard with John Runyon and Sean Ryan. It's weird. It hasn't always worked. They moved Billy Turner around like crazy. They've done some wild stuff, but they've always gotten good performances out of their offensive line. And part of that is because they've consistently invested in the offensive line. And I think we're going to see more offensive line investment this year. And we'll count on it continuing to work for the Packers because, hey, it's worked so far. I don't see any reason to think that it can't continue to work. In the meantime, that's all I've got for you on this episode of Blue 58. I appreciate you tuning in. I'd appreciate it even more if you'd take a second and share this episode with someone you think will enjoy it. It's going to help more people find the show and get more people involved in this conversation you and I are having about the Green Bay Packers, which in turn is going to help all of us, me included, become smarter Packers fans. And as I always say, smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. I'm your host, John Meerdink. We'll see you next time on Blue 58.